This will probably be the strangest verse I've started a message with in 4 years, or ever in my time here. As we continue this series in Proverbs chapter 15, verse 17, it says this: "Better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred." Will you pray with me? God, we thank you for the opportunity that we have to be your people gathered in your presence this morning, declaring your truths and your glory and worship. And we pray that in this time, we would be receiving your truth through your word. We ask that that you would instruct our hearts and guide our minds as we consider the way you are guiding our families this morning. We ask this in your name. Amen. If you were here with us last week, you know that we were talking about what it looks like to experience the blessed life in the context of our work. What it looks like to have wisdom in our work, whatever the various callings or occupations or the work of our life, even if it isn't work that we're being paid for, whatever that is, to offer glory to God. And as that message was ending, I laid out this challenge for us to take time through this past week to offer our work and our days, whatever we encounter in our day, to him. And I offered to, you know, have the elders and have leadership pray for you in that regard. And a lot of you submitted some prayer requests for us to be able to consider and to be lifting you up particularly. And I just want to let you know that that was something that I took to heart as well. And so I took time during the mornings this past week, you know, to specifically pray that God would be at work in me during the work that I was doing, that I would have an opportunity to give him glory through the work that I was doing. And as I was doing that, I was typically thinking of kind of my day-to-day work here at the church. And I wasn't really particularly thinking about some of the projects that we had going on in our home. But like most of us, we have projects going on in our home throughout the week as well. And one of my projects this past week was to fix a clogged sink in our upstairs bathroom. So one of our boys, I don't actually know which one, was trying to be very helpful to us one day and decided that they were going to do some cleaning. And they used wet toilet paper to do that cleaning in the bathroom and some of the windows upstairs in our house. And then to get rid of that toilet paper, instead of putting it in the garbage or the toilet, they clogged the sink up with that and kind of like washed and pushed it down the drain. So we had this like slow sink problem that started off just kind of slow. And I, you know, tried to use Drano and other things like that. But eventually it just was clogged up. And so one of the projects I had to do this past Thursday was to finally kind of fix that drain. And so I went to a discount tool store and bought a snake after Drano didn't work. And so, you know, I went through that process. I took the trap off. I was, you know, removing things and then started the process of snaking it out with that discount snake, and it broke in minutes of using it and just wasn't helpful at all. And so I went back to the store and then got a kind of like, I don't know, I think they're newer. They're not like your old school plunger. It almost looks like a bike pump that you're using to plunge it. And so I got that. I went back home. I filled up the sink with water. And then I used this pressurized plunger and I plunged it through. And after a minute or two, the drain was fixed. And I thought, oh, I wish I would have done that initially. It was so much easier. And I'm kind of, you know, running the water and watching it flow in the sink. And Becca was upstairs. And I said, hey, come look at this. Isn't this so beautiful, watching this water flow freely after it had been clogged? And then Becca, I think, noticed it first. There's kind of like a gurgling in the tub. And she said, hey, look over at that. And it looked like the swamp creature or Stranger Things, not to like offer spoil. Like, it looked like it was coming up through our bathtub then. So there's this thick, black, sludgy liquid coming up. And it smelled like death, you know, it smelled awful. So it's coming up out of the tub. And so I'm not a plumber, and I'm like thinking, and I thought like, okay, I just pushed the clog a little bit further down in the drain. And so I tried the same thing. I thought that pressurized plunger was excellent. So I start plunging that, and it appears as though I'm only pulling more water, this black water, if it's, you know, whatever you call it, into the tub and then splashing it around the bathroom. I don't want to be too dramatic, but to be just a little bit dramatic, last week when I said the fall taints the work that we do, that was like the fall brought to life in my bathtub. You know, that was like the effects of the curse upon the work that we do with our hands as I'm sitting there elbow deep in this disgusting kind of water. So I make a third trip to the store, a different store, to buy an actual functioning quality snake. I go in some thick rubber gloves. I go back home. I fix the problem in just a couple minutes. And I'm there, and really, as I was having this moment the next day, I was thinking, that's kind of the moment when worshiping in our work is a challenge. You know, like when you have a breakthrough conversation or your team accomplishes something that's like a big goal or deadline that you're looking to hit, like in those moments it can be easy, you know, in a sense to say, God, thank you for this work or for giving me this opportunity to do this kind of work. But it's in those moments, you know, when you're in sludge, when work is hard, when things aren't going well, that really we have our sense of worship in work tested. And there was kind of that moment in hindsight. You know, I went down after that second clog was cleared and I let water run for a long time before proclaiming that the project was complete. I went downstairs and Becca and the kids were excited to have a functioning sink and tub again. And then that night, as I was brushing my teeth and the sink was working properly, you know, it was this nice moment of saying, this work, this project was complete then, and I was able to serve my family and to do this work that allowed me to care for people that I love. You know, there was a good end to that story, but worship in our work, in living a blessed life in our work, is not something that's always easy. It's something that's a commitment of our lives to see the ways that we're able to bring glory to God. And even in the midst of some of those hard moments, to see the opportunities that he places in front of us to give him glory. And so as I thought about that rule of being able to serve my family faithfully, that works well with where we're going in Proverbs this week. And that's kind of what that funny first verse I read is all about. If we think about what it looks like to live with wisdom in our family context. And so to look at that verse again, it was Proverbs 15, verse 17, that says, better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred. And this isn't sort of, even this kind of comical verse, isn't an anomaly in Proverbs, or isn't just kind of like a one-timer. Later on, in Proverbs 17, verse 1, it says, better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. And then in another comical proverb on the family, in Proverbs 19, verse 13, we read, a foolish child is a father's ruin, and a quarrelsome wife is like the constant dripping of a leaky roof. And in this kind of, these semi-comical proverbs, and I think, to be clear, that it would have been funny to those first hearers as well, that it isn't just something that's kind of funny for us to think of and evaluate in a different context, that these were images meant to stick in our minds, so something that stands out. We're seeing Solomon address what wisdom looks like in the home. And in that last proverb, to be clear, it makes sense that the spouse Solomon highlights is the wife because he's writing to his son, and part of what he is illustrating is for the kind of wife he should be looking for. But certainly, a quarrelsome husband would bring the same effect to any home, or quarrelsome children would bring the same effect to any home. We know that a quarrelsome home is an unpleasant place to live, like a place with a constantly dripping or leaky roof. And in those first two images he gives, it's expressed there that it's better to have a humble meal or really kind of a meager meal, a sparse meal, than it is to have a meal of extravagance in a contentious environment. And we could probably all go around and share some stories about really beautiful moments that we've had around the dinner table. You know, for us, I think in our American context, when we think about meals, one of the first meals that we think of as a big day is Thanksgiving for us. And so many of us could sit around and tell stories just about a wonderful kind of a warm Thanksgiving meal. It was a time when, you know, when maybe you had family and friends that were around in your household, or a time where you traveled to see family or people that you love and care about. And it's just kind of a warm, rich sort of experience in there. And so you almost get this sense, if we were going to kind of modernize this proverb and place it in our context, like Solomon might say something like, hey, it's better on Thanksgiving Day to have a little bit of dry corn than it is in a room with love than it is to have a turkey and a beautiful meal with all of the fixings in a room that's contentious, in an environment that's difficult, in a place that isn't filled with love but is filled with anger. And I think, you know, that we can all probably accept that truth pretty easily. That it's better to be in a setting with love and to have little than to be in a setting where we have much or have everything we could hope for and have it be a hateful setting. And so again, what we see when we think about these verses is that Solomon is laying out this dichotomy between homes that are living in wisdom, even if they don't have a lot of material wealth, even if their crust is dry, and homes that are living out of wisdom, that are living in folly. Places where maybe they have much, but it's also a house that's filled with much strife. So wise homes, and this is what he lays out, they offer a sense for us where things just feel better, where they're more enjoyable, where there's a sense we get that this is a place where we want to be. And for us this morning, what I want us to consider is that wisdom isn't just part of a good home, and that kind of love and good feelings and some warm feeling isn't just part of a good home, but that this is the way our homes are designed to be built. In Proverbs 24, verses 3 to 4, we read this: by wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established. Through knowledge its rooms are filled with rare and beautiful treasures. Solomon's pointing out that there's a foundational importance to build and to cultivate our homes, our lives, in wisdom. And it's pretty clear at the end of that verse when he talks about how through knowledge its rooms are filled with rare and beautiful treasures, that he isn't just talking about material wealth. We just read two other proverbs where he's saying, you know, if you have the driest crust in town, if you just have a small serving of vegetables, if you don't have a lot, but have love, but have peace and quiet, that there are good things there. And so when he talks about these rare and beautiful treasures, what he's saying there is the relational quality of our homes. That if we're building our house in wisdom, that it has things like understanding, that it has this sense and this experience of love, that it's a place where we feel connected with the other people that we live with. And so this morning, and this is a nice thing, that Solomon doesn't just leave us with this proverb that says you should have a house built with wisdom. That's, again, as we're going through this series, that's something pretty obvious to us, I think. But he instructs us in a few different ways about what it looks like to cultivate a home of wisdom. And so we're going to look at three of those things that are highlighted in Proverbs, and that's not the full list of areas where we're instructed in the home, but it's going to give us a taste of things that we should be cultivating. And as we do that, there are two things that I want us to kind of preface that with this morning. That one, we should listen to all of the things on this list, to all of the passages. There are going to be some of the verses we read that are going to specifically speak to husbands or wives or children, kind of spouses, men or women, things like that. There are going to be specific roles that are addressed, but men in this room need to listen to things that were written for women and children as well. Children need to hear things that were written for men and women as well. There are things in these truths that apply to all of us and that are a part of understanding what it looks like to have a house that's built in wisdom. So we need to listen to all of them, even if they don't particularly identify us in the proverb. And the second, and this is an important thing in most messages, that I would encourage you to listen for yourself. So some people in this room might be really excited to have their spouses or their kids grow in wisdom, you know? And you might even be tempted at different points in the message to kind of remind them that this is something that would be good for them with an elbow, you know, or to say, hey, that verse talking about how husbands or wives should be living is something that you need to hear right now. But I'd encourage you this morning to kind of keep those pointy elbows to yourself and to think about the way that God might be instructing you in the truth that we see in the Proverbs. So with that said, we're going to start by looking at some of those proverbs written that address what it looks like to have families cultivating wisdom. And we're going to look at Proverbs chapter 30, beginning in verse 11. And in that we see this, and this is a proverb not written by Solomon, by a man named Augur. And it says, "There are those who curse their fathers and do not bless their mothers. Those who are pure in their own eyes and yet are not cleansed of their filth. Those whose eyes are ever so haughty, whose glances are so disdainful, those whose teeth are swords and whose jaws are set with knives to devour the poor from the earth and the needy from among mankind." This is a pretty sad proverb that Augur's communicating here. And what he's talking about is someone who is clearly not living in wisdom, someone who's living in folly. He's describing a foolish person. He's talking about someone who's hypocritical, someone who's dishonest. You know, he's talking about someone who has haughty eyes and views others with disdain, someone who uses their words to tear other people down. And one of the traits of someone that lives like this, as he describes, is that they are the kind of people that curse their fathers and do not bless their mothers. In that, we see that cursing our parents is not an indicator of living in wisdom, of living the blessed life. It goes on further. We see this theme throughout Proverbs, like in chapter 13, verse 1, where it says, "A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a mocker does not respond to rebukes." And like I said, it could say a wise daughter or a wise child here. Solomon is writing to his son. And it says that a mark of wisdom is listening to the instructions of your father. Other translations say discipline instead of instruction here. It's this idea that wise children, and this could still be true for adult children, are people that listen to the wisdom or the instruction being passed on to them by their parents. Wise children do not curse or mock their parents. Finally, in some of the opening sentiments of Proverbs, in chapter 1, verses 8 and 9, it says, "Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They are a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck." So not only is this something where Solomon is encouraging his own son not to be cursing or mocking as a child, but he explains that as this child listens to his parents' instructions, as children listen to their parents' instructions, they are instructions in wisdom to make their lives better. And in the same way that this is an instruction for children to listen, this is an instruction for parents to take seriously their call to cultivate wisdom in the lives of their children, to provide wise and meaningful instruction to them. So children are instructed, as living in wisdom, to listen to their parents and to not be mockers. And as I said in the beginning, this kind of relates to all roles in the family. We see that in James 1:19 that declares, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." Listening is a mark of a wise family. Wise families cultivate this sense of listening to one another, of hearing one another, and not just listening, but accepting the truth that they experience from one another. So listening is an important element. Another mark we see in wise families is found in Proverbs chapter 23. Beginning in verse 26, it says, "My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes delight in my ways. For an adulterous woman is a deep pit, and a wayward wife is a narrow well." And in this instance, the There's this sense of an adulterous woman that's being addressed, again, because Solomon is writing to his son that's growing to maturity and is near the age of marrying. And so he's saying, you know, at that point, when you're a married man, don't fall into this trap of an adulterous woman. But we also see Solomon, he's not just putting the blame on women in this scenario. There are strict kind of warnings that go out to his son in chapters 2, in chapters 5, in chapter 6, and in chapter 7 about the son being faithful. In one of those places in chapter 6, beginning in verse 27, he says this to his son, "Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned? Can a man walk on hot coals without his feet being scorched? So is he who sleeps with another man's wife. No one who touches her will go unpunished." So the instruction of Proverbs is that adultery has no place in a wise home. And even to go a step further than this, there are all of these actual kind of warnings, not just about that moment of adultery, but about living in a capacity where you're able to recognize those things and ward them off and to look the other way and to not fall into that kind of a trap that we see written in the book of Proverbs. It isn't just about a one-time kind of moment where you say yes or no, but what the father writes to the son is that in wise relationships, in marriages, and in families, that there are these choices that are made over and over again to cultivate faithfulness to our spouses. There's this sense that's clear that faithfulness isn't just one big decision, but that it's these decisions that we make over and over again. Another mark of being a wise home is being faithful to one another. Wise families cultivate faithfulness to each other. There's a dependency upon one another. There's a sense of loyalty to your families. And then one final mark of wisdom that we're going to explore is something that's spoken of as kind of a general proverb, but the chapter that it's in has a number of proverbs about family and about the significance of family life. And it says this in Proverbs chapter 10, verse 12. It says, "Hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers over all wrongs." And this wording is something that is very familiar to us from 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8, where it's talking about a church family again. And it says, "Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins." And so this instruction that we read for individuals in Proverbs, or that we read instructed to the church in 1 Peter, is something that certainly has value within our families. The final takeaway, so these are three simple things, is that wise families cultivate love to one another. And we know that being in a loving family feels nice, you know, like I said when we started. We assume that good families are loving families when we look at other families that we know. We desire, many of us, for our family environments to have that kind of a feeling of warmth and love and faithfulness and listening and understanding with each other. And it's good for us to keep in mind that Solomon isn't just writing about something that's supposed to make us kind of like feel good or feel nostalgic or to see ways that we need to live in our families. What he is describing for us in Proverbs when it comes to the family is to say, this is, in wisdom, is to say, this is what families were designed to look like in their creation. And three of those things we see are that wise families listen to one another, they are faithful to one another, and they demonstrate love towards one another. And in this list, like I said, this isn't a comprehensive list of all of the things that he passes on, but this would give lots of us a number of things to consider and to think about in our families. As children, we need to listen to the wisdom that's being passed on by parents. And as parents, we need to embrace that role of not just passing on demands, but of cultivating wisdom in our children. families and spouses need to make that commitment, like we see in James for the church family, to be places where we listen and honor one another, where we are quick to listen and slow to speak and slow to become angry. Families and spouses need to make that commitment of faithfulness to one another. Families need to be a place where children experience love that covers over a multitude of sins. Where spouses experience love that covers over a multitude of sins. And I'm aware of this, that many of us know in families they should be places where we listen to each other, where we're faithful to one another, and where we love one another. And some of us will leave a message on families feeling encouraged. We will say, hey, I think that we're doing a good job doing this with our kids. You know, Becca and I will certainly talk about how we're doing this with our boys and with our relationship, you know, and we'll kind of think about that together. Some of us, when we do that, will think we're doing all right with this. Some of us will think something like, you know, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. We're doing okay. We need to work on a little bit. Some of us will feel a challenge to say, man, we really need to kind of get some things figured out, or I need to get some things figured out in the way that I live as a spouse or as a parent or as a child in regards to my family. And I'm aware that for some of us, anytime we hear a message about how families are designed to be, that's a difficult message for us to hear. That maybe you're sitting there and you're thinking, I wish I had a parent that was leading in wisdom that I could listen to. Maybe you have a family or grew up in a family where shouting was more common than listening, where unfaithfulness has been present, or where love is something that seemed like a nice idea back on a wedding day that feels like a lifetime ago. In those situations, and whatever those situations are for us, we need to remember that as we seek to be people that live the blessed life, a life of wisdom, a life the way that God designed for us to experience life, that He is the one who is our ultimate Father. You know, it wasn't until after I looked through the Proverbs and I kind of thought about some of these main themes that are sticking out that relate to the family, that the story that came to mind to me was the story of the prodigal son, the parable, where we see this image where we're learning about God as a father who's one who listens, who's one who listens to both of his sons, even when his sons curse him. Even when his sons don't pay heed to the instruction that he's offering them. We see a father in that story, certainly of one who remains faithful to his sons. Even again, when the younger son leaves and curses his father and wishes him dead and wants nothing to do with him, we see this image of God as a father who loves that son and remains faithful to him when he sees him from a distance off. And we also see, certainly in that story, this overwhelming sense of love from the father to both of his sons when they're struggling in life. And that imagery for us is something that's just as powerful. That as we think about what it looks like to have blessed families, as we think about what it looks like for us to cultivate wisdom in our families, we need to acknowledge that in God, we have this ultimate Father who is perfect and flawless in offering these things to us. And that as we want to live faithfully and to lead good families, we look to Him as the example to do that and as the means of being able to cultivate those kind of environments in our home.